The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Okay, folks, we're gonna go in 3-1.
Hey, it's Footy Prime, and it's Thursday. Honest, it's Thursday. It's not really Wednesday afternoon when we're recording this. It's Thursday morning, and it's Footy Prime, as I just mentioned. I'm Shams, we've got JC here, we've got Craig here, we got Wonger, and we got Dubs. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Shams.
Hello.
Hey, Shams.
Yes. Hey, JC. We got a guest today as well. As you probably know, football fans, it was announced that Canada have a guest coach as part of their camp in Irvine, California, later this week till the 18th, I believe. Basically a North American camp for the North American-based players. There's a guy that knows a thing or two about North American soccer, a thing or two about Canadian soccer. His name's Tommy Weldon Jr., and he hasn't been on for a while. I thought he'd been on like the last few months. It's explained to me it's been over a year. But Tommy, welcome back to Footy Prime, and I do apologize. We should have had you on way before this, but you're on now, so be happy.
No problem. Listen, it's taken me that long to thaw out from the championship final, so you get me in a good place.
are we allowed to talk about that?
We can if you want. I don't think I've ever spoken publicly since the press conference.
Ooh. All right. Have you had time to decompress? Listen. I want to get to the camp and the Canada side of things, but as we're here, listen, it was an incredible moment, an incredible occasion. It went viral, yeah, but from a footballing standpoint, aside from that wonder goal, it wasn't great. as a coach, how did you deal with it?
I think you probably will see the reaction on my face on the first play of the game when Marco comes out and shanks it to Rodriguez and he almost chips him. I'm like, I look and go, this is not a game of football, so we're going to have to prepare the best we can. And listen, it was the best free marketing this country could have got leading into a World Cup year because it's seen by over a billion people. So imagine having your bad day at the office. You try and go radio silent for a bit and a billion people see it. And you're like, okay, you got to live with that. And that's no problem, but it can't happen again. And the reason I say that is we've got to have contingency plans because every sporting director or agent or new player outside of Canada that I speak to, they're like, wow, you guys really play in the snow, hey? Mm. Like, we can, but we'd rather not do. So I didn't ever want it to then just discredit the work that's being done across Canada. We just got to have better contingency plans. Look, the game's the game. It's one that you don't actually feel it was a final, but you know, it's certainly memorable.
Were you worried from a player safety standpoint as well?
I was worried for career-ending injuries. Gauthier Ntigny broke his hand, actually, because he lost his foot in. He had one of those hand warmers in, and he's fell and broke his hand. He played most of the second half and extra time with a broken hand. But aside from that, we were fortunate. Even the lads afterwards, you know, you talk to your Ali Moussa, anyone, they're like, you know, how do you prep for that? Because if it's training, like right now, I'm going to take the lads in pre-season out there. Wow. I'm going to prep them for a possible final. Yeah, snow, we move inside. It's just one of those ones. It's pitch preservation. So it just became a bit of a lottery. But like I said, the icicle kick will be remembered around the world. So it is what it is.
What was this, Tommy, when you took some of the players on the bench and you took them to the dressing room. Is that correct?
I did.
During the game, yeah. Keep them warm?
Yeah. So, again, help me understand this. We ask for benches because Ottawa is the only stadium that doesn't have it. It's a league requirement. They couldn't get it. I'm like, well, there's snow coming, and not to mention it's protection of the players, which is health and safety, no problem. I don't know if you've seen, but we got snowballs thrown at us after Fraser Ed scores. I'm like, come on, this is comical now. But anyway, so we'd said, look, go inside. FIFA Club World Cup. It was too hot, so players were inside keeping cool, coming out. The flip side of that is it's too cold. Players are inside, keep warm, bring them out. If we have to play without a man down, I don't see that as a cheat. I got accused of being a cheat by their coach. I'm like, hang on a minute. We're keeping them inside. You can do the same. And then the referees didn't know what was going. It was new for them, and then ordered me to bring them back out or get booked. Crazy.
And then when they started clearing the field before extra time, it seemed a little odd to me that you'd gone that far playing in those conditions. I understand you want to at least have some semblance of football. I get that, but it was a little bit confusing.
Again, it's a different game, right? The second half, I'm looking at it, it's getting stuck for them as well. And I know even their players, as we went in at the end, I think there was an offer of going into penalties. We're like, no, we'll clear the field. Like, so we're prepared to wait for it for a better game. And it was a better game second half. It was more a football game. Why couldn't that have had that 45-minute delay? Like, listen, the NSL final had it because of weather constraints. We're used to that when lightning strikes. Same thing, it should have been cleared and a better game. Because, for example, it changes your opinions. I make a change and bring Ali Moussi off. Ali Moussi, you know, he's a Formula One car. He's not an SUV. I bring him off because he's getting caught in the snow. I needed SUVs getting through there, more nimble vehicles. Sergio Camargo came on and was exactly that. But had I known that it was being cleared, it changes. Now, whether the result stays the same or not, I don't know. But you're forever having these questions that you've got to try and put to bed.
I might be starting. Oh, sorry, Dubs. I might be starting something.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, but I'm going to interrupt you anyway.
No, well, I didn't. That's not fair.
Go on.
We're talking at the same time. I might be starting something, but Nate Ingham was on our show the day after, and he was fairly wary. His eyes were red, and he was having a good time. But he also said you were a cheater. I don't know where it came from.
That's why he's joined me. Because he's one himself. He had his shovel up his sleeve, that's clearing right. The snow on his line. So takes one to know one, I guess.
Was that a moment when you saw Nate shoveling the snow? Was that like, I want that guy. I need him on my team. Look,
I said, I think everyone knows that we talked to Marco. His contract was running out. You know, decided to explore other opportunities. No problem. Known him since he was a kid. But as soon as that happened, I knew Nate's contract was running down, and he's a gamer. And he's, to be fair, he's been one of the best goalkeepers without the merits and the individual awards in this league since its inception. So, strangely enough, he played the first ever game at Ecclesfield, but for York. He's a great character, great guy. So if ever you're going to replace someone like Marco, Nate Ingham's perfect. And to leave a club that's going into CONCACAF, it speaks volumes for the respect we have for one another.
The moment's passed. It was a throwaway line about what type of vehicle Tommy is as a coach. So the moment's passed, you guys.
That's a good question.
Move along.
I like that. No, what kind of vehicle are you?
Jeez, a Land Rover, a British Land Rover that's adaptable to the conditions.
Yeah, but you're reliable. They're not very reliable.
sometimes depends. Ask my wife around Christmas. not all conditions, I guess.
Okay, so let's move to this Canada camp. First of all, have you got your tracksuit yet? Are they giving you a tracksuit, or will you get that when you get it down there?
It's gonna be like Christmas Day all over again, isn't it? It's like you know, you've been national team players, Dubs, Craig. You know, when you get like first day of preseason or going into national camp, seeing that, so not excited. Look, my brother was literally just away with the U20s in Costa Rica, and same kind of thing for him. And then literally when he was away, I got the call. But I'm excited to wear that. I think it was 12 years ago. I was with the U17 squad under Sean Fleming, so. I don't think that kit would fit me anymore, I'll be honest. I don't think I'm in the same shape. So hopefully they've got some size that are a bit more fluctuating for me.
Do you know what you expect, Tommy?
A little bit. Jesse called me and approached and just said, look, you, and then we had a staff meeting a bit like this with everyone there and Maro Biello and all the guys. And just said, look, we've got guest coaches, Romuald Pizer as well from Ottawa and Daniil Henry as well, which is good. He said, look, I'm going to give you tasks. He said, so you'll be part of the technical group. You'll get tasks. We'll talk about the processes on the first day of arrival. But just be prepared to be part of the staff and come in with opinions.
Well, Sharm's on yesterday's pod, Tommy, yesterday's, said you got called up. Is it much like a player getting called up? How did that happen?
I didn't say that, did I?
Yeah, you did.
I wouldn't know. I was never good enough to be called up for any of the countries.
But like, what was the process? Did you have to make yourself known? Or was this Jesse saying, you know what, Tommy's been doing well. I want to bring him on a national team trial.
I believe it's more that. As you guys know, I was in the process for the job. So that speaks mm-hmm. volumes to Jesse to bring me in, and out of respect to the work, I guess, I've been doing with Cavalry and Canadian football in general. I just think he's done a great job in connecting people. You know, John Erdman did very much the same, trying to keep everyone part of it. But Jesse's, you know, gone one step further. He's had, like, I think James Merriman's been in one. I think Patrice Geis has been in one. Martin Nash has been in one. He's trying to spread the love and the knowledge of the game, so we all feel, I guess, part of it, because what is our job? To create a broader base for the Canadian player to come through. So if we understand what the national team level is doing, we can get the younger ones coming through and really be the support system. And I think that's what he's recognizing.
But you're not going there as a young coach, you know, there to get experience. I mean, you've you know, been around the block, right? You're an experienced, successful coach.
It's glorious hair, Tommy. Come on, we also discussed that on yesterday's podcast.
what do you think? I mean, what are you looking forward to? Like, obviously, working with Jesse Marsh, a different style of football, perhaps a different, you know, way he deals with players, maybe. What are you hoping to gain from that experience of working beside him?
Do you know what I love is his enthusiasm and his clarity. So again, knowing bits of him, because we have talked, like, he comes out to the games and, you know, he sent me a really nice message after the final, funnily enough. But he was there, like, he's been very supportive in that way of the Canadian game. And that's brilliant to see. What I like about him is again, watching what he's been through the Red Bull system. So yeah, there's a clear identity to that in terms of the high pressing, the front foot football. And it does suit a lot of the profiles we have in Canada and the national setup. You know, he carried that through to Leeds United and onwards. I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets that message across, because it is a all-in type of, you can't have someone going, well, I'm not sure if I'm going to play, or I'm going to step into midfield if I'm a centre-back, or as a striker, am I going to expose my midfielders if I go on this one? They have to be all-in, and they come from different clubs that some are possession-based and used to that. Some are, you know, again, it's probably a bit different when, you know, Fonzie's back in the group or Jonathan David, but he gets their buy-in. And as a head coach, that's your job. You're a salesman to your philosophy. And that's the bit that I want to see, because I think he comes across brilliant in media, and he must be brilliant in the room, because we can talk about X's and O's up there and what we need to do, but you have to sell it. And I think he's really good at that, and he's committed to his style.
Tommy, talking about... You know, a little bit about the differences between club football and international football, and, you know, how you approach that. Can you talk a little bit about that and the differences and the nuances between the two?
Yeah, do you know what? I think as a club coach, it's the day-to-day buzz. Like, you have one game, you do well, you create relief to prepare for the next one. You lose, you create this gut, the anger, the hunger to go again. I think Club football is a day-to-day business. International football is like playoff football. So I live it both, because the 28-game season, I always say that's always the hardest to win, because you've got to go all quarters of the country. And we live in, second, third largest country in the world. Whereas the playoffs are basically do or die, win and advance, which is what international football, you have a bad game, you're out of the World Cup that you've been preparing for 4 years for, or out of the Olympics. So I think it's more like a playoff format, and that's what I'm looking forward to have to get my eyes set on.
Tommy, you alluded to Jesse's clarity in the way that he's leading as the men's national team coach. Do you think that type of clarity is critical toward, and there's also three CPL players on this roster for this North American player camp in January? You've done a lot of work in the Calgary area for Canada. We talk about you being a builder in this country, like a really critical character and figure, kind of leading the way in the landscape for Canadian football. So do you think that same clarity could be brought to the development level to ensure that maybe that leap from CPL, which views itself as a top tier outfit, so that's that gap is closing?
Yeah, reality is, Dubs, is we have to provide players that play well and sell, right? We've got to move them on. You know, Joel Waterman wouldn't be playing for the national team if he was still with me. You know, and I always think that's our job is what, like, do I want to get my club more silverware and playing CONCACAF? Absolutely. But in that experience, we're creating, you know, moments and memories for fans, for everyone. But we're part of the food chain. I want to make sure that I'm clear on my job. That's why my owners have kept me in this job for so long. I'm going into year eight. I know what my place in the food chain is. So my job is to make the best environment possible for Canadian football in the area I live in. And we talk about the young players locally. Look there first, then what's national, and what you don't have, go international. But yeah, I think that clarity does help with what we're trying to build.
It's a great point. The young players, you know, we know young players in the CPL, they have ambitions to go beyond the CPL, mm. right? It's a stepping stone.
Absolutely.
But when a young player comes to you and says, you know, hey, Gaff, you know, I want to move on to MLS or Europe, but yeah. they're not quite ready. You know, they're in the right place at the right time. Look at Sholo Jimo, right? For example, yeah. he's been a star, a young kid coming through the ranks, York or into Toronto. I'm not saying him specifically, but what do you tell these kids who aren't quite ready but needed maybe put another year in at CPL?
Well, I've just lived it with Mikhail Gerasimenkov, and before that, Mo Farsi. You know, Mo Farsi's representing Algeria. You know, he'd obviously been set back with his injury this year, but he wasn't quite ready. He was coming out of PLSQ. CPL was perfect for him because if you look at it, and this is my mind's eye, MLS is always the most established league in North America, right? And for Canadian teams. But to get there is hard. You've got MLS Next, which is down, you know, down almost like a tier three for me because MLS Next players need that CPL experience in front of fans where points matter, chasing for trophies. That's what professional football is it's success driven. MLS Next is development. So you'll see a lot of, you know, kind of triangulate through there. And I've just lived it with Mikhail Gerasimenkov. He wasn't ready to compete for a first team place with the Whitecaps and they had a killer season. He came to me and the coaching staff, you know, Jay Whelan did a lot of great work with him from a defensive aspect, working into the attacking one. He had a great season with us. And suddenly he's gone from a Moldovan youth international to now he's playing for the full international side. And now Whitecaps have just given him a decent MLS deal. Hopefully now he kicks on. So in part of this football food chain, as even though we're not all part of the same system, I think we're starting to see a sense where we are all working together symbiotically.
You've been here for nearly 25 years, Tommy. From a development standpoint, are you seeing an improvement? I mean, our national team looks brilliant, but is that a reflection of our development, or are we sort of the stars of the line, or have you seen an improvement in development in the players?
Probably the quickest data point is unattached FC. When was the last time we saw that on any men's national team? And the fact now we're getting it where we're going into, this is that underbelly of all the North American players and all of them are with clubs. And now there's a list of, well, he can't make it. Well, can he come in? There's a depth chart that's, you know, being designed by, you know, by in purpose. You're now seeing that on the women's side where there's NSL players now in the women's side as well that are currently playing. And then, you know, you're not necessarily seeing as many university or unattached FC. And I think that's credit to, we needed a structure. Our job now is to make sure our structure lasts and we create our dollar vote. I always say that, you know, whether it's CPL or NSL, we still need the dollar vote. Everyone's like, yeah, click like buttons, hearts. We love this league. Oh, it's flawed because Valor dropped out or, you know, there's only six teams in the NSL. Well, invest. Buy a ticket. Give a ticket. Buy a jersey. Spread it. Then you're part of the system. Mm.
You're right about, you know, the young players. Now the world's eyes are actually on the CPL. We're seeing these players getting opportunities outside CPL. What about coaches? That seems to be lagging behind a little bit. Yourself, Bobby, in good places, don't get me wrong. You know, like you said before, you were in that conversation for the Canada job, yeah. right? At some point that will happen. But do you think the world's woken up to the fact that there's some pretty damn good coaches over here as well?
Yeah, listen, I guess there's two ways to look at it. Absolutely. Something should have happened for Bobby by now. I'll always say, look, we're great rivals in that way, but I've got a respect for year in, year out, he wins trophies, right? You can't hide from that. It's a competitive league. We're always in the conversation. We've won our fair share of them. And I think we do a good job of developing players that move on to other levels. I think we know where our place in the food chain is. I think we get autonomy. I think we've got great ownership that give us that rule to be, what did Amarin say, the manager of Manchester United. That's probably what we both are in our roles within our respective clubs, that we're doing everything from, you know, overseeing what the academy is and the people that run it to, you know, the first team football and getting to coach it. So we have autonomy. Wilfred Nancy, poor, what a talented coach. But he was 8 games into the job and he's gone. So careful what you wish for. Do you want that opportunity to go into a insert MLS club name and then suddenly it doesn't work well, or you go overseas, it doesn't work well, because there's such a hierarchical culture in football now where you've got sporting directors, presidents, general managers, technical directors, head of recruitments. We get to do all of that. So I'm not sure. You know, I get asked all the time is that I just know I love my job. I get to live it as a fantasy football manager and to get opportunities to go. It is a dream team, fantasy. I don't know. I don't know any different.
Yeah, that's interesting. The Amarin thing was interesting. His comments about I need to be the manager and not the head coach. He just hires a head coach. You look at Maresca at Chelsea, who the part of the story there is that he has been told by the medical staff, no, you can't play this player. It wasn't his decision to assess the data provided to him. Yeah. He's like, no, you can't. Do you need to have that? Even as a head coach, you surely have to have the right to select what players you want to select despite what maybe advice you're being given by other assets of the club.
Do you know what? Maybe you're going to start to see, you'd say an evolution, but you're going back to where I think a lot of managers now want to be managers and have a say on the transfer policy. I think we've created so many layers of infrastructure that, you know, someone like Mikel Arteta, I think he's now built himself a really good job at Arsenal now, but he's almost cleared the path and gained the respect that he does make decisions on the transfer policy because he has to bring the players in. You've seen Moneyball, and Moneyball's a great story with that. And you see the bit where Billy Bean's arguing with his manager. He's about, no, play him. And he's like, well, I'm not playing him. That must happen at Manchester United, at Chelsea, at Real Madrid. You know, imagine being, you know, Carlo Ancelotti's probably one of the world's greatest coaches, and he was deemed the tailor because he would work with the players he had. But imagine him having Perez over his shoulder all the time about, you got to play him. You got to go out and get him Mbappe.
You've touched on, Tommy, what you think you'll be learning at the Canada men's camp. What does it mean that's professional? What does it mean to you personally to be called up? You know, you've got, like, how's it feel?
I'm very proud because I talk about all the time, you know, I'm a proud double national. You know, I was born in England, but I grew up in Canada, you know, and, you know, Craig mentioned I've been here half my life, which is really interesting. So I guess the reaction of my kids was pretty cool. That their friends were messaging them and saying that, oh, your dad's been called up into the national team. That's pretty cool. So there's a great sense of pride because the work that I'm doing is basically to give back to a country that's adopted me and welcomed me, right? So then to be reciprocated the other way, one, when I first got interviewed for the job, to be in consideration was humbling. And two, to get brought into it is like, okay, that's great. It, you know, it's give and take in terms of energy transfer.
Do you worry about ageism? Because Craig and I are looking into sponsorship for Just for Men. And I see, and Dubs and I, we were talking about some hair.
I just got my roots done. I've got an inordinate amount of grays.
So this is where we're at. That last time we were at Jimmy Brennan's house, we actually dyed Craig's face. Just so we would have some.
It was a long time ago, obviously. Hair.
Yeah.
He's had a few showers since then, which is nice.
Shows.
Well,
hey, Tommy, is there someone you're looking forward to coaching this next couple of weeks? I know the European guys are still in Europe, but there's guys you know, obviously, in this camp. But is there someone that you just can't wait to reconnect with?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think I've never worked or played against Oso, and I hear such great things all the time. So I want to see how he operates and how he operates in and off, because people say, you know, one, he was one of the best players coming through at TFC. and the best player in training. His leadership is good. I've played against both MLS sides, Montreal and Whitecaps, in different ways, and I've seen most of those players on there in different ways. He's the one that's been in the national team a long time that I've not got to see. Same with Larea. I just think it's those two I'm excited to see on a regular, like, just day-to-day basis. And then beyond that, look, I'm always going to say Joel Waterman. And the reason being, I know the Joel that I drafted from university, and I also see Noah Batner, and I think Noah's as close to what I've seen with Joel, and see how he fits in, because he had a really great year in CPL, and how does that transfer into the best of the players within North America?
What about you, Tommy, with your preparation as coach, starting your preseason, and you mentioned 8 years with the same organization with the Cavalry. So is there anything that you do yourself, like methodically, systematically every single year to get ready? And is this a way to kind of go to the well to invigorate your preparation, to do something a little bit different, to spark something new, even though you mentioned how much you love the job, but like you need to do something a little bit different, I imagine, to look for that spark?
Yeah, you got to turn over a few rocks, right? I know every year got to come back with something new. And I think that's really been my premise. I'll always take the first thing I do after the last ball's kicked, whether it's in the final or semi-final, whatever, we'll have the first week, we'll be talking with the players, exit meetings. And I always talk about three simple things. You know, what went well for them and why? What could have been better and how? And what do we need more of for next year? And I do it in the raw emotions, because you know you're either hurting from the loss or celebrating and stinking the champagne. That's it. But you get the raw emotions. The following week, I do something similar with the staff, a little bit longer, and I just get their raw feedback of, you know, where can we move the needle a little bit in a salary cap league and blah blah blah. What could you do more of? And then I take time away. Dubs, is I have to go away, and 2 weeks. We're fortunate. We generally go to Maui, which is the most calming place in the world. It's slow, right? And I need it because I've got two speeds, Land Rover, like all out, only parked in the garage. Done, and that's it. And that's what I did. Park myself. I read in the morning. I take calls in the morning, and the rest of the day is biggest decision: do we stay by the pool or go by the beach? But in those 2 weeks, I'm recharging my emotional battery. Because I'm an emotional leader, so I lead with an empath, so I feel things. I need to make sure I'm not making emotional decisions. So they're the things that get me going, and then from there, I make the decisions that I feel are the best for the next, I think, three-year cycle. I think in a salary cap league where we're at 1.2 such for salary cap, we can't have the same team year on, year out. Every 3 years, and I think we've just tapped out on our 3 years, three finals. I think we're at the start of a new one, and Nate Ingham coming in is the signal of that, and a few that you'll see in the next coming days. That's my process. And 3 years ago, I went to Santa Barbara, to New York City's training ground, and Nick Cushing was there at the time, and ended up leading to Leon Hapgood going to New York City the year after, but ended up leading to us winning the regular season, the following year winning the championship, and the following year trying to defend the championship. So I think they work.
From a recruiting standpoint, it's obviously very competitive. And with the salary cap that you have in CPL, how do you maneuver your way around all that with the leagues in North America and obviously the enticement of Europe?
Yeah, I guess the easiest way now, Craig, is our body of work. And I mean that from the stadium and everything here at Spruce Meadows, to the continuity we've had, to, you know, the competitive nature we've had, to going to CONCACAF, to the sale of players. So when I'm talking to the next, I feel, up and comer that might be coming out of university or maybe currently coming out of the MLS set next, where they've aged out of there, I can use players like Mo Farsi and Victor Latori, Arabin Peppels, Gotes, Joels. I can use them as examples of types of players that we've worked with as examples. So again, let's go back to that sale. You have to sell the story of the club you run, right? And why they come. You win some, you lose some. But then the hardest part of it is not necessarily the recruitment, is the saying goodbye. Because there's a lot of players that you can keep because you care about them. And it might not be the right thing. And even I think this season, I probably kept a couple that maybe I shouldn't have, just because I cared that much for them and their contribution to that date. But like I said, players are cyclical, unfortunately, and they have to move on. They probably get tired of listening to my voice and the coaching staff.
So who's running the show while you're moonlighting the next couple of weeks?
Well, unfortunately, you've got to build your bench strength, right? So from the general manager side, Tofa Fakunli's been great. He's an up-and-comer that, you know, one day I hope will take over my job as the GM. So you're always trying to groom your successor. I've got my brother and Nick Ledgewood that will take care of the technical side of things and get the preparations on, you know, the welcome video to the sessions and the periodized plan. We'll talk away. And then my sports scientist is the one now that's probably the most important, getting the guys in for their fitness, you know, for their medicals and fitness testing. So we've met, we're balanced, they're ready to go.
Wow, you're so replaceable, aren't you?
There's another spot on the podcast for you, Tommy.
Yeah. No, Nate's got that.
Yeah. Just know your boy Nate is a friend of the show.
You've only mentioned Jimmy Brennan once, so I guess everybody's replaceable, aren't they?
He's conspicuous in his absence, put it that way. he's not welcome back tomorrow. Tommy, listen.
How about your Everton? Tommy, your Everton's doing okay. What do you think of David Moyes? He's doing a solid job as always.
He's doing a solid job as always. So listen, he's made us difficult to beat. And I think that's it. You're coming in. Like I said about Carlo Ancelotti, he's a tailor. He gets the people he plays. There's a bit of teething problems with the new stadium. I don't think we're as good. Nor do we have a lot of the players when, you know, Ndai and Ghana Gay have gone for African Cup of Nations when Grealish was injured. So I think we're down to the bare bones. We still need some pieces. Yeah.
Was he injured? Was he injured?
Let's believe the narrative. He can do what he wants. He's brilliant, isn't he? But you need characters like him in the game. And I think he's created entertainment. So I think it's true in any team. You need entertainers, and probably why he doesn't fit or didn't fit in the end with Pep.
Yeah, and he is apparently a great guy as well. Just very generous at this time to the fans. And that, solid guy. Listen, Tommy, thanks so much, mate. Have fun the next couple of weeks. Sure. Guatemala on, I forget, what is it? Is it the 18th? 17th. Guatemala? 17th, right?
And the CAN Champ Pro, I heard, is prior to the game. So should be a good night to tune in.
All right. Outstanding. All right. Listen, mate, thanks so much. Enjoy yourself. And we'll chat to you before the CPL kicks off, okay? We're making an effort because we need to speak to you more often.
All good. Happy to be a guest coach as and when time permits.
All right. Thanks, mate. That's Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Happy New Year, Tommy.
And now Canada as well the next couple of weeks. All right. That is Footy Prime then for this Thursday. Wink, wink. We're back probably tomorrow, maybe. I don't know. Maybe Jimmy's going to be back. I don't know. Or best of or something tomorrow. But tune in anyway. Tommy's great, isn't he? He's one of my favorites.
Terrific.
Sorry, right. Dubs. Craig and I jumped on a couple of your questions.
No, I was just going to exit stage left at that point. That's the second time I tried to ask a question. Just like, wow, it's just not my day.
Virtual. You know, we do a pretty good job, I think. We kind of figured a lot out, but it is still a little bit tricky sometimes.
Yeah, you have to be able to pinch the person to go, it's your turn.
Yeah. And when you're doing it, do you find like a second of silence is like a lifetime?
Yes.
So then you all kind of jump in at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of these days I have a studio.
Well, we kind of do. We just have to head down there.
We do. Yeah. Yeah. All the way down. No, we'll get to it. Oh, by the way, it might be this Friday, but we've been promising you a newsletter for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
A long time. We're going to finally have a newsletter. It's going to be basically a little reminder of what you missed this past week on Footy Prime. So if not this Friday, then I imagine the following Friday. Sign up on our website. Yes, we have a website. We are footyprime.com. A little pop-up window pops up. Yes, give me information. And then we have a little spiel at the top of the newsletter and then links to our content from this past week. It'll be evolving, but maybe some contests. Maybe.
Yeah.
We've got some ideas. We've got a lot of gear in Jimmy's basement.
We think.
We have a lot of gin.
And a lot of gin too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
purveyors of gin. That's who we're pretty prime.
We should tell Jimmy to sign up for the newsletter so he knows what he's missed.
That's a great way to end the show.
Like, subscribe, and comment, please.
Bye.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
I wonder if Tommy's been working on his fitness. Do you think that Jesse will have him put the boots on?
Yeah, I wonder if he expects the same from his coaches as he does from his players.
I'm sure.
Oh, that'd be interesting, eh?
Mm-hmm.
With that hair, he can do anything he wants.
Yeah.
Seriously, man.
But you can see Jesse, right? You know, the coaches run every
day. No fat coaches. Do you think he has like a get on the scale when you get there?
No, but there is a certain thing, like depending, and Forrest, you can speak to this. Even you, Ong, are like growing up, even playing like gridiron football, you have a head coach and you have like a technical staff underneath them. Mm-hmm. What their kind of regular routine is like, you're not forced to fall in line, but it does set a certain tone. So if Jesse's the type where personal fitness is important to him, then you probably would see a staff that's in shape as well.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're like arriving at your first camp as a guest coach and you got gravy down your tracksuit, belly bulging, stuffing poutine. Oh, hey, gravy. Jesse. Good to be here. Yeah. There's camp poutine on doors.
That's right.
Right. Same. Coaches have changed over the years, eh? Used to be good at a tubby coach. He didn't give a shit. It was a hard drinking coach. Craig, back in your day, who was the hardest drinking coach you had?
Who looked it?
Well, our manager, John Duncan, who came after Bobby Ferguson, he loved to drink. He fell off his stool. I remember at a supporters evening. He was so hammered, he fell off his stool.
No. Yeah.
Before it was just the best, pure comedy gold. Mm-hmm. Okay, we ended the show about. But
this is why people like. There's a lot of people that tune in and they really look forward to what we say at the end. Like Asa said,
it's the best part.
Maybe we'll turn this into our Patreon. So it's if you want to catch the last bit, our after hours part of the show, you can subscribe.
That's right.
Well, we have finally got a newsletter done.
Yes,
check. So the Patreon is the next thing that we'll be talking about in years.
We should probably stop now, at least. Okay. Bye.